Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, and welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast. This week, we're crashing on the shore with writer-director Trey Edward Schultz, who we talk to about his latest film, Waves. I'm Sam Howlett, and I had the pleasure to sit down with Trey Edward Schultz, who broke out of his festival debut, Krisha, back in 2015, and followed that up in 2017 with the post-apocalyptic horror film It Comes at Night, which starred Kelvin Harrison Jr., who reteams with Schultz again for Waves, a teen drama, but this is more Moonlight than Dawson's Creek, more Virgin Suicides than The O.C. No disrespect to Dawson's Creek or The O.C., by the way. Harrison plays Tyler, an 18-year-old under pressure to excel from his domineering father, played by Sterling K. Brown. After an injury threatens his potential career, he starts hurtling out of control, and his family struggle under the weight of it all. His sister, played by Taylor Russell, meanwhile, has her own problems as she strikes up a romance with fellow student Luke, played by Lucas Hedges. I sat down with Trey Edward Schultz at the London Film Festival last year, where we spoke about filming in Florida, creating the film's eclectic soundtrack, and his filmmaking influences. Enjoy. Okay, we're delighted to welcome Trey Edward Schultz to the Curzon Film Podcast.
Delighted to be here.
Thanks for joining us. So, we're talking about your third film, Waves, and your first film, Krisha, I know is very personal to you, that it's like sort of directly about your family and involves your family members, and I know that you've said It Comes at Night, although it looks like sort of a post-apocalyptic horror film, is also a very personal film for you. Can you talk about in what ways Waves is personal to you?
Where to begin? A lot. It's the most personal film I've made.
Okay.
It's the most autobiographical I've made. I honestly don't know where to begin. It's everywhere. It's real things that are a lot of things that happen in the story are autobiographical, right, to my life. My girlfriends, my family, it big time.
What's it like putting yourself on screen like that?
Weird.
Yeah.
especially this one, because like you said, everything I've done is personal, and
yeah,
it's never been that weird. Okay. It's just natural. Like, I think too, my parents are therapists, so these movies are a bit of like me working out stuff in life, kind of, and like, but this one was shooting it stuff too. Like, we were recreating real stuff where that was the first time it was like all consuming dread, and it was like, maybe I've gone too far. Is this healthy? Like, what we're doing right now. I came out on the other side of it feeling it is healthy and cathartic and happy we did it, but it was intense.
Is that kind of how you see cinema for you then, a way to kind of put yourself out there and kind of talk about like your memories and your feelings and things that have happened to you?
I think so. I think I start with like the films I love or by filmmakers I love that make things only they can make, you know? Right. So I think when I was like starting out and trying to find any kind of a voice I'd have or a unique perspective, it was trying to be honest to myself and my situations, you know? So, I think it's a bit of that. And just really making stuff that I care about and feels honest to me. And, yeah, and giving my perspective on it, I guess.
Okay, so this film has got a very interesting approach to narrative. It's got the dual narrative. Did you set out thinking, okay, I'm going to make this film with kind of two perspectives to kind of change partway through, or was that kind of very naturally something that happened organically?
It happened organically. I mean, iterations of this have been brewing for like a decade, so okay, maybe halfway through that, that's when the structure really unlocked.
Right.
And the epiphany of a brother and sister and two couples on each side of that, mm-hmm, with linked by their family and a tragedy at the center. So that's been the DNA for a very long time. Mm-hmm. What was hard is figuring out finally how to actually combine it all into, yeah, a working, right, story and script. You know, that was very tricky.
Yeah, I was trying to think of other films that have kind of done that successfully. I thought Chungking Express does it really well.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Chungking was the epiphany, right, when I saw that for the first time. It was like, oh, this movie I've been thinking about could be this, and it could be a brother and everything I was just saying. Yeah. But that was a big one. Okay. And other bit, like, I love Chungking Express. I love Metal Jacket. I love, oh, yeah, Melancholia. I feel like Barry Lyndon is that. There's an intermission, yeah, in the center, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't know a lot that lead it to such a pinnacle event in the central point and then shift character and tone in such a drastic way. And so that was exciting and scary, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I was thinking as well of Mulholland Drive, because that,
oh, yeah, very, yeah, abruptly, that's a great,
that,
yeah,
really like spins everything on its head, and like it's like a separate that, film. Yeah,
brilliant example. I don't know why I didn't think of that. That's, yeah, I love that film.
But can you talk about that, kind of the challenge of kind of how you pick the right moment to make the change?
Yeah.
But also thinking of the audience, thinking of how they're going to react to that change and how to kind of make,
well, it totally. And I think one of the big I remember, even like after we shot the movie, I was with my producer, we were like in the ocean, we were like, yeah, there's still that fact, is it gonna work?
Yeah.
Are people,
yeah,
gonna, yeah, go with it after this point? A big theory we had is that girl, you know, Emily, played by Taylor Russell, like, if, yep, you don't love that performance and her and go with that, yep, shift, then it's not gonna work. So that was a big part of it. Then another was just, for me, a lot of the soul and spirit of the movie isn't until the later half.
Right, okay.
But, like, I almost wanted it to feel like a panic attack closing in, but then the movie gives you a big hug and helps you get over that panic, yeah, attack and think about it and get, yeah, on the, yeah, other, yeah, side of things. So I know at the end of the day, too, you're just like, I think I would go with it. Like, if we can pull this off, like, I would love, yeah, to see a movie like that. So hopefully there will be others that will, you know?
Yeah. I think this film's a really interesting way to look at it is as a teen movie, as a teen high school movie. And can you talk about genre in a way? Because especially, yeah, with this and with It Comes at Night, you've kind of skirted around with genre, not quite fully, and maybe not quite fully embraced them as genre films. But is that something, totally, you think about when you make these, especially the last two films?
Not with, it's interesting, I'm trying to think on it, not like, okay, I'm going to tackle this genre, I'm going, right, to do this thing, yeah, now. It's never, it all always comes up organically. Like, I think especially with the waves, you could there's like thriller, there's,
yeah,
teen movie, there's soundtrack movie, there's romantic comedy, there's a lot of different, yeah, like, yeah, things, yeah, you can pull from. But I think that's what was so exciting, is that it all came out organically. Because I think I just know, at least, I can't speak to others, how I work. If I approach things like, yeah, I'm going to make this thing that plays with genre and pull, yeah, it would be a mess and a, right, disaster. Okay. So, like, first I just start from the personal and this story, and then it organically kind of becomes what it is, if, yeah, that makes sense.
You, okay, know? You mentioned soundtrack movie there, and you have a lot of fun with the soundtrack here.
Definitely.
Can you talk about, you know, picking the soundtrack and the kind of the balance, I guess, between music that fits the scene well, yeah, music that those characters would listen to at that moment, because there is a sort of blend of diegetic and non-diegetic. Can you talk about that, the soundtrack?
Yeah, huge, the DNA of it, and it's so much so to, like, the script, I have the songs embedded in, yeah, and you could listen to it as you're doing it. And basically, in a broad way, twofold. Like, one, I wanted it to feel honest to the characters, to, yeah, Tyler and Emily and their situations. Like, a lot of it is actually happening in the world, and we play with how it, maybe at this point you're hearing it almost as a piece of score, but then you're hearing it diegetically because it's stemming from a real part of their world. So there was that. There's just the fact that, like, I love all the songs and they're some of my favorite songs, and I also wanted I wanted it to work. Like, if you pull out all the songs and put them in their order as a playlist, it, there's a narrative there. Like, you can follow each song with the narrative of the movie and the through line, to where it's almost like every song, even like lyrically, can like work on the narrative. But if it becomes too obvious and on the nose, I don't think it works, you know? So it was a very fine line. Ultimately, I hope it just brings you closer to the characters in their world, you know, especially Tyler and Emily.
Well, that's one of the big differences between this and It Comes at Night, I think.
Oh, yeah. That,
it's soundtrack and...
Soundtrack.
There's a lot of things, obviously. This
Florida, locations, color.
Color, yeah.
It's a very muted movie compared to this
one. Yeah. What's the feeling of going from It Comes at Night, which is so kind of so small and cramped and claustrophobic, and this, which is so big on so many different levels?
It was liberating. It was just like liberating in every way. Sometimes hard, way harder than anything we did on It Comes at Night, but it did feel like, because too, like Creature, my first movie, was like a single location and stuff, and still I always see it as kind of like a chamber drama, and then Night is sort of like other territories as well, but I even remember making that and fantasizing about making this. And like that Endless and Blonde had just come out. And on weekends, I was driving around water holes, listening to those, dreaming about making this movie. I was talking to Kelvin about it back then. And like, so I did, you know, in the subject matter, it's just a very like harsh kind of movie. Mm. And just flying away from that and going to this sort of sprawling kind of approach felt very fun and liberating.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the film is set in Florida, which is where you live.
Yeah,
correct.
We lived in South Florida for a number of years. Okay. We shot the movie in Broward County, probably like 30 minutes north of Miami, where my girlfriend lived her whole life, and now we live in Orlando.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because it's not really a place that's in film that much, considering how kind of
lately a little bit though. Okay. Considering like at least like Moonlight and Florida Project, and there's like Spring Breakers and. But you're right. Like, in the scheme of things, it's not, and it, like, there's not, just from a practical sense, there's not much of a tax incentive. There's nothing now. Okay. So we could have, if we would have not shot in Florida and other states, we could have gotten back $1 million.
Right.
Like,
okay.
That's a ton amount of money for a movie like this. So it, but Florida was always deeply embedded in the DNA because I'm in love with it.
Yeah.
You know, love's another big part of this movie, I think, thematically and emotionally. And Florida is like, I'm in love with it and I wanted to do it justice, you know.
So how did you tackle how to kind of capture what you love about Florida on screen, because this film, as you say, is so colorful and so vibrant? How did you go about capturing that?
A lot of it, I think also just living in Florida for a good number of years and having this movie in the back burner and thinking of it, a lot of it's way naturally, organically embedded in there. You know, and traveling around Florida a lot in different places and South Florida. I honestly, I don't know a good way to intellectualize it, but I just feel like I lived there long enough to sort of spiritually understand it and how I feel about it. So it was just like working that into the narrative kind of, and like any detail, any approach we could do, go after that, you know. And a lot of the locations they're actually at are like places I go and love. And so there's that naturally there.
Okay. And in terms of casting then, so this is your second time working with Kelvin Harrison Jr. Was he always Tyler for you?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, you know, like I said, it was on the back burner for a very long time. There was nothing written, really, so it could have morphed and been anything. But as soon as I started telling Kelvin about it, I, from the start, was like, there's two characters you could play. There's Tyler and there's Luke. They might have not even had names, actually. No, I don't think they did at that time. There was, like, the brother or the sister's love interest later. And his first thing was like, the brother sounded really interesting. And I was like, okay, cool. And that excited me. And then, it basically, like, now I can't imagine it. And I can't imagine, Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the movie would be. You know, the characters would not be black if it wasn't for Kelvin. Okay. I mean, and that collaboration is so gigantic. He, as I was writing, we were texting like crazy and I was talking about stuff. He got the first draft of the script 8 months before production or more. Yeah. And it really, Tyler and the family molded to what it was because of that collaboration I have with Kelvin, you know.
And then Sterling K. Brown as well. Incredible casting. Man. Yeah.
The myth.
Yeah, that's a really interesting character as well about how
how
the audience reacts to him and how I reacted to him.
Like, yeah, well, I'm curious, how did you react?
Well, you kind of don't know, is this a kind of story of like a, not abusive, but like a father that you're supposed to kind of raise an eyebrow towards, or is he one that you feel like, kind of doesn't mean everything he says, and I don't know, can you talk about writing that character and trying to create that?
Well, from our perspective, it was basically like, for me, I think, I love Ronald. I think he's a great dad, but I think he loves too hard.
Yeah.
And he's not, that's what I talked about a lot with Sterling too, of like, if he just would have
eased back a little
bit and let Tyler open up to him more, you know, because he feels like he has to bear down and push Tyler so hard to succeed. If he just would have ease back and let him come to him a bit more, things would have been totally different.
Yeah,
I think.
There's really interesting moments as well when he says things like, I didn't pick wrestling, you picked wrestling.
Yep.
So if you're going to do that, you're going to do it well. And it's that kind of approach to parenting that I found really interesting. And
yeah,
it does kind of skirt towards where you're supposed to land with this character, which makes him really interesting and complex.
Totally, which that's what I hope. And I hope it feels like a nuanced, complex kind of journey that Ronald and the dad goes through, you know? I think I hope he feels like a flawed, complex human, you know, because I think we're all like that and we all have good and bad and we're all just trying. I think ultimately he's trying to raise his son and his children the best he can. And he makes some mistakes, but he's human, you know, but I love that he can go where he does.
Yeah. You know? And finally, I just want to ask you, what's coming up next for you? Because, you know, still very early on, with three films in.
It's true.
Where can you go from here?
I have no idea. I've never been in the situation, too, because it's always been since my first movie. I think I felt like these movies had been brewing for a while, and I had to make them before someone would not let me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and I was just struggling for a long time and having no success. It was like, okay, now it's time. I got to take full advantage and do it. And now that I've done these three. Now I'm like a blank slate.
Great.
This is, I put everything I have creatively and as a human being right now into this movie. So I have no idea. I want to get this into the world and then take some time and figure something out.
Cool. Great. Trader Schultz, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, brother. It was a pleasure.
Thank you very much for listening. If you have any thoughts on Waves, please let us know by emailing podcast@curzon.com or reaching out to us on Twitter, where we are at Curzon Cinemas. You can find us on iTunes, Acast, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoyed the show, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And
it's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. ACAST.com.